Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Supertalk 99.7.
On Supertalk 99.7 WTN, it is the Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986, 615-737-WWTN. Always love having Peter Brooks from the Heritage Foundation and also from the Boston Herald on the line. And doggone it, you know what, Bell? I hate when this happens. Is Peter on line one or five? I got two lines that are five. I hope to God this is Peter Brooks. Peter, you're on WTN. Is this you? Thank you. We got all these people calling up about a previous topic. Anyway, Peter, thanks always, as always, for joining us. And first of all, let's talk about Russia very quickly, because I know that there are things that are happening right now, including some sanctions that the Trump administration has now decided to level against the Russians. Now, all of this, of course, on the backdrop of what seems to be a very complicated dance between President Trump and Vladimir Putin, of course. And now for President Trump, he has decided now to implement some sanctions against some folks affiliated with Vladimir Putin. What exactly are these sanctions, and who is being sanctioned? And this is all about the Russian meddling in our elections.
Yeah, it's about Russian meddling in our elections, plus other stuff. That's important for people to understand. I mean, yes, the meddling is part of that, and this is the strongest action yet. But they were talking about some, like, previous global cyber attacks. Remember that one called NotPetya? Do you remember that?
No.
Okay, that's all right. Well, it was last year. It was a global cyber attack, and it was considered to be the most destructive and costly cyber attack ever. I mean, it dealt with stuff like got in the way of commerce. It mostly focused on Ukraine, but it covered the world. You know, it shut down computers. It looked like ransomware, but it really wasn't. So they went after that. And there's also been some efforts by the Russians on cyber outside of, you know, the elections to interfere in electrical grids, and nuclear things, aviation, all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's worth people reading the indictment. It's like a page. That came out of the Treasury. It's not an indictment, I'm sorry. It was a notification from Treasury regarding the actions taken against five entities and 19 persons by the Treasury Department, which will freeze their assets. It will prevent people from doing business with them. I mean, some of them are kind of like, oh, yeah, well, of course we're not going to do business with, you know, the KGB, which has a new name today, which GRU is military intelligence. It's now called the FSB, but it's the old KGB. Right. But then there's certain people, and a lot of them are associated with that. It went after the Internet Research Agency, which is the Russian social media organization or cyber organization that spread all of the fake news, passed itself off as Americans to mislead people. So this is actually the strongest action yet, and I think it's not only meant to punish, it's also meant to deter future actions.
Yeah, and I guess the question that I would ask is, okay, so we have, in the past, we've implemented sanctions against Russia. Do you think that these sanctions, these specific sanctions moving forward, will have an effect on Russia? You said this is to punish, but also to deter. So the next move is Vladimir Putin's. What does he do?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. I mean, yeah. The Russians have said that they will respond, and we don't know exactly what that is. Now, they may be also including the fact that we signed on to concerns about what the Russians did in England or in London against the former Russian agent. That poisoned him with this terrible nerve agent called Novichok, which may be the most lethal nerve agent out there. So it may be part of that as well. The Brits expelled a bunch of people. So it's not quite clear exactly, but they said they will respond. So that could be things like, you know, towards Britain, it could be expelling diplomats. I'm not sure exactly what it means towards the United States.
Yeah, you know, Peter, what's interesting is when we talk about Russia and we talk about this, and to be honest with you, the last couple of years, I've been here, it's hard to believe, 4 years now, we've had so many various cyber attacks, and we've seen it at the hands from North Korea, from Russia, from China, if I'm obviously not mistaken as well. So is there
Iran?
Yeah, there's got to be a worry that what the Russians may be doing in retaliation for these sanctions could be something of a cyber warfare brand. So you tell me, are we ready for anything the Russians might send our way?
Well, this is one of those sort of, you know, the cyber stuff is very, you know, it's done in the shadows. You know, we create something to block it. They do something to work around it. There are probably things that we're doing as well. This is one of the big debates out there, Dan, actually, is like, should we retaliate on cyber? You know, if we find out that they've been messing with our electrical grid, should we do the same sort of thing? Should we put things out there? And the other challenge with cyber, of course, is attribution. You know, I feel like they feel pretty confident about these sort of things. I'm comfortable, but I know early on when we were looking at cyber, the hard part was really to find whose doorstep to lay the blame at, because they use all sorts of rattlers. In fact, back in the 2000s, there was a major cyber attack against Estonia by Russia. The Estonians had moved a Soviet World War II era memorial, and the Russians were really unhappy about it. So they basically did a denial of service attack, and they traced it back to Russia. But most of the servers that were used were actually in the United States, because you can route them through all sorts of servers. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's sort of, you know, the sort of cat and mouse game. So it's very difficult. And then you can trace it back. And, of course, they're going to try to cover their footsteps, try to cover their tracks. And you get to a certain point and you can't go any further. So it's really difficult to basically run it down to somebody's PC on the desk in a certain place. It seems like they're more capable of doing that today. But that's always the challenge. And then the question is, how do you respond to non-kinetic attacks, you know, something that isn't like a bomb being launched or dropped or a missile being fired? What do you do? When have we reached a hostility, you know, like for as a cause's belly or a cause for war? So there's a lot of questions out there that people are still wrestling with all these years later. But this is certainly an effort to punish and deter, the Russians from continuing to do this. But I don't know if they're deterrable on this.
Yeah, you know, it is interesting, and I've been reading about this. I find this fascinating, this whole thing with Vladimir Putin and the Russian state behind the poisoning of these double agents. And so now Great Britain and what they've done is they've expelled a whole bunch of folks from Great Britain.
Undeclared intelligence officers. Russians would call them diplomats, but they're undeclared They're intelligence officers that are working undercover as diplomats. So the Brits have probably been watching them and said, okay, it's time for you to go.
Yeah, and we're standing beside our friends, of course, in Britain. And so the question is, okay, so it seems like with Vladimir Putin, we're poking a bear that is already being roused out of, I'm not going to say he was sleeping, but, you know, you keep your enemies closer. And now it seems like we are engaged in the situation, whether it's this poisoning of these double agents or the situation with the sanctions and the cyber warfare and all this other kind of stuff. It just seems like we're in the second year of President Trump's term, we're heading into a very complicated situation from a foreign relations standpoint. We do know that Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is out. Mike Pompeo is in. From a policy standpoint, where do you see President Trump going with this new relationship that seems to be morphing with Vladimir Putin? The president has wanted to be kind of friends with him, but it seems to me like that is now dissolving.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we'll have to see how they respond to this, these most recent actions. Will this deter them from doing it? I mean, look, Russia has a very weak hand. Most people don't realize that. They can't stand toe-to-toe with NATO and the United States in a conventional war. Their economy is not very strong. They're hurt tremendously by the low oil and natural gas prices, because that's what a good portion of their economy is tied to energy exports. They've got poverty problems, all sorts of problems. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to weaken others to make them as weak as Russia is. They're not doing this. So in other words, they're trying to create chaos and trying to create the confusion and trying to undermine institutions. And that's what they're here. They're trying to bring us down to their level of comprehensive national strength. They can't stand toe-to-toe with us, especially when we stand with our European allies. But, of course, nobody wants a fight with Russia, right? We don't want this. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to deter what they've done. We're trying, but through economic sanctions, which is the most draconian thing you can do short of war, what they did in Ukraine. The challenges they provided for people in Syria, their cyber efforts. So what you keep doing is you keep turning up the pressure on them, like North Korea. I mean, I don't want to make these exactly equivalent, Dan, because they're not. But, you put the pressure on North Korea, and now I'm not sure exactly what's behind North Korea's change of position in terms of talking with us and wanting to discuss denuclearization, but it could be the economic pressure. So what you want to do is you want to make it painful for Russia, and they decide that all this other stuff we're involved with isn't worth it because of the pain that's being implemented or it's being meted out to us. so upon us. So this is you know, the desire, but you can't tell where this relationship's going to be. The Russians may back off. They may up and escalate. It's hard to say.
Yeah, this is going to be very interesting. Peter Brooks, as always, love to have you on, and you have a great afternoon. 2:15 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show. Yeah, that whole thing with Russia and the poisoning of the you know, double secret agents, whatever. Just very fascinating, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens again as we move into the Mike Pompeo era there within the Trump administration as a Secretary of State. It's going to be fascinating to see where our relationship with Russia continues, because we know that this is one of the priorities, it seemed, when the President Trump, when he took office, was he really did want a better relationship with Russia. No, I don't think there's any collusion or anything else. And good Lord, I talked about that for quite a bit yesterday. Now, one of the more interesting things that has happened over the past hour or so is the fact that now it looks like Robert Mueller is going to target some of the businesses and some of the business dealings of President Trump. Now, for the president, he has been saying all along that, listen, if you start going after my businesses, then that is going to be, I think the president even at one point called it a red line that he was not going to allow to be crossed. Now, this is from the New York Times. The special counsel, Robert Mueller, has subpoenaed the Trump Organization to turn over documents, including some related to Russia. According to a couple of people briefed on the matter, it is the first known instance of the special counsel demanding documents directly related to President Trump's businesses, bringing the investigation closer to the president. Now, you remember yesterday, maybe you remember, maybe you don't, I talked about how the media for, I mean, it's been like over a year, folks. I believe it's been almost over a year that the Mueller investigation, the Russia investigation has been, quote unquote, closing in on the president. And it's just never really happened. They've been a year and they simply have not come up with a whole heck of a lot tying President Trump to any collusion. But now the ball seems to be, if these reports are true, then the question is going to be, how does President Trump respond? Because this is almost like the president has been saying, you know what, Mueller, I dare you to go after and start issuing subpoenas on my businesses. Because the president has been saying, again, that's a line that I'm not going to allow to be crossed, is for Mueller to look into President Trump's business ventures. So we'll have to see what happens. That is a story that is continuing to develop. Another story that is developing, just to keep you up to speed on what is happening in Miami. Just a very horrific sight happening at a college in Miami, Florida, where there has been a bridge collapse. And what it was it was a pedestrian bridge, and it literally, folks, I kid you not, it collapsed onto the highway below. And they're talking about how there is multiple fatalities. There's a whole bunch of people injured as well. And if I heard the top of the hour newscast correctly, this is a newer bridge. This is a bridge that costs millions and millions of millions of dollars to build, and it just collapsed. It's like, what, 3-4 years old, something like that? If I heard correctly, it was built in 2013, and the thing just collapsed. And there is one picture that I'm looking at. And again, there are multiple fatalities, but there's one picture that I'm looking at, and it's like the bridge has collapsed onto the back of a car. And it's like the bridge landed on the car's trunk. Can you imagine being the driver of that car? I kid you not. This person, I'm assuming, perhaps maybe this person that was in this car survived, but can you imagine you were about 5 feet from being crushed under the weight of this pedestrian bridge that has collapsed? And so we have all kinds of authorities on the scene, and this is, again, breaking news. Witnesses saying that they could hear the screams coming from the cars that were and are trapped underneath all of this rubble. One woman says, as soon as I looked outside, she could see dust flying everywhere. She knew that the bridge had collapsed. And of course, we have all the people that are screaming. In a statement, the university said that it was, quote unquote, shocked and saddened about the tragic events unfolding on campus. They say at this time, we are still involved in rescue efforts and gathering information. The university says they are working closely with authorities and first responders on the scene. Governor Rick Scott tweeting out that he was aware of the collapse and that he would be in constant communication with law enforcement throughout the day. And if you are anywhere near a computer or if you're anywhere near a television and you see what this looks like, it literally does look like an overpass or a big concrete bridge just simply collapsed onto the highway below. And that is where we sit now at this college in Miami, where they're saying that there are multiple people that have been killed and many others trapped and injured. So we'll keep you updated on that story as it continues to develop here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. 2:25 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandis Show, 615-737-9986. 615-737-WWTN. Coming up at 2:35, Kellyanne Conway has a message to Hillary Clinton. Stop pretending you're a feminist. Wait till you hear this. It is straight ahead on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. This is out of the Heritage Foundation, heritage.org. The crisis of fatherless shooters. And they talk about, of course, something that we've all been talking about, and that is these mass shootings. And they talk about how in the wake of the Parkland massacre, the age-old question, am I my brother's keeper, has a newfound relevance. But in addition to a structure and discipline, a boy's relationship with his father can be a profound source of identity or not. They talk about how if we're going to prevent the next Parkland, we need to take seriously the need all our young boys and men have for a dad. Now, in my opinion, the relationship between a boy and his father, and a man, to be perfectly honest, and his father, I think they are, one, invaluable, and two, incredibly overlooked, and in some places dismissed, as a matter of fact, as something that's not necessarily important. As a matter of fact, I'd say that there's some people that may even say, oh, that's just a perpetuation of, you know, masculinism that we don't need in this country, right? I mean, how many times have we heard that? They say that in the wake of the Parkland massacre, indeed, we need to take a look at those relationships. They talk about how it is crucial here in America to talk about how more American children can grow up with the emotional, psychological, and spiritual security that comes from relationships where one is deeply cared for, connected, and known. You know, we always talk about how it's absolutely absurd that in this country, the phrase toxic masculinity is something that is constantly thrown around. And I was hearing a conversation, I can't even remember where it was, but they were talking about this concept of a toxic masculinity and how the relationship between boys and their fathers contributes to toxic masculinity. So not only are they dismissing their relationship between a boy and his father, but they're also essentially saying that that is a bad thing. And it's incredibly, incredibly offensive. And so the Heritage Foundation talks about how among the 25 most cited school shooters since Columbine, 75% were reared in broken homes. So what does that tell you? It tells you that when there is a broken home situation and when there is not a dad that is involved in the relationship, or when a father's access to their child is not allowed, is prevented, then ultimately it is not the father who suffers the most, but it is the child. I mean, how many times have we seen divorces where you have it's typically, if we're talking about this, it's typically a mom who will do whatever she can to prevent her kids from seeing their father for whatever reason it is. And that, yeah, it hurts the dad, but it really does hurt the kid. Now, then you talk about what's been going on, of course, in the inner cities and the fatherless households there, and how that also contributes to the decay of the inner cities. And it all brings the point home, very much so, that there is indeed a crisis. Like, she's wearing some sort of a hat that you'd see at some sort of a Kentucky Derby horse race kind of thing. It's like, who told her that she looks good?
It's like she's competing with Kim Jong-un for worst dressed.
That's exactly right. It's like you want somebody to do an intervention with Hillary Rodham Clinton. Ivanka. Melania, somebody from the Trump orbit. Maybe can just slip a note to Hillary somehow. Just, you know what? We're going to give you a makeover. Come on out. We'll dress you in some good Trump clothing or something like that. But good Lord, I knew, Belle, it couldn't just be me.
JCPenney clothing would be better than what that woman wears.
That's exactly right. Anyway, yeah, I think you can see the story on the Dan Mandy Show page. I was just struck by the by what she was wearing. See, now I feel so superficial. Let's get to what Hillary actually said.
If you look at the map of the United States, there's all that red in the middle where Trump won. I win the coasts. I win, you know, Illinois and Minnesota, places like that. But what the map doesn't show you is that I won the places that represent 2/3 of America's gross domestic product. So I won the places that are optimistic, diverse, dynamic, moving forward. And his whole campaign, Make America Great Again, was looking backwards. You know, you didn't like black people getting rights. You don't like women, you know, getting jobs. You don't want to, you know, see that Indian American succeeding more than you are. Whatever your problem is, I'm going to solve it.
Yeah, so that is Hillary in India basically saying that if you voted for President Trump, then you are somebody who is backwards. You're somebody who is this is the new deplorables comment, right? And so one of the big stories out there today is the fact that there are people on the left who are just begging Hillary Clinton, stop talking. Not only do you need to stop talking, but you do really need to go away, because what she's doing is she is distracting from, one, all of these apparent rising stars that are on the left. And we're talking about people like Cory Booker and other folks who are coming up through the ranks. But she's also distracting from the likes of Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden. And so when she says these kinds of things, it not only looks bad on her, but it also looks bad on the entire party and her entire party. And so one of the things that we've talked about often enough is the fact that Democrats, it's like they're in a no-win situation, because there are a lot of people who are fans of Hillary, especially in the donor class. Now, one of the dynamics that we saw and we have seen over the past year since the election is you have a lot of people who are donors on the left that they want nothing to do with the Democrats or Hillary, because they completely wasted their money. They donated all that money to Hillary's campaign, only to see her lose to what some people say the most beatable candidate in the history of beatable candidates, and that would be President Trump. And so while she is globetrotting across the world, saying the same damn thing over and over and over again, she's distracting from the message of the Democrats. And so if you're somebody who is a donor for the left and you desperately want to beat Donald Trump, you want to sit back and you want to take a look at Hillary and you want to say, you just need to stop talking. I'm not going to open up my checkbook because you're destroying the party. But then there's others who the more liberal wing of the Democrats. If you're not into Bernie Sanders, then you're a fan of Hillary. And so you got all these people that are appreciative of everything that Hillary has to offer, and they want Hillary at their cocktail parties and all these other places where she can schmooze and convince people to donate to the Democrats. But I think she's doing far more to harm the Democrats than help the Democrats. And frankly, for me, that is a good thing. And so now you've got people like Kellyanne Conway saying to Hillary, stop pretending that you're a feminist, and basically saying that because Hillary was one of the things that she said was he had all of these white women who essentially allowed their husbands to tell them who to vote for, which would be, of course, President Trump. How could a true feminist say that? And that's what Kellyanne Conway is saying. I've got more on that story and a whole lot more straight ahead here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is the Dan Mandy Show. On Super Talk 99.7 WTN, Dan Mandy's show. So apparently Pamela Furr is monitoring the show from wherever she is. By the way, Pamela's out today and tomorrow. So she says, OMG, if it were a man, you would never criticize the clothes, because Belle and I were talking a little bit about Hillary and the way that she dresses. She was off in India, and she's basically, at least to me, it's like she's wearing a potato sack with flowers on it and a weird Kentucky Derby style kind of hat. And I would say that I would, if a guy showed up completely inappropriately in a foreign country, wearing, say, for example, a leisure suit from the 70s, of course I would make fun. And by the way, let's not forget that my wardrobe here at the W10, I am incessantly, well, used to be before I started dressing better and lost all the weight, but people are incessantly making fun of me. Remember the jorts comments? When I was wearing all the jorts, everybody made fun of me. Still upset about that, but that's okay. I must have thrown about 10 pairs of jorts away. It's okay. So, yes, people make fun of men all the time. Anyway, by the way, great news for all you Furbies. Pamela is filling in for me Monday, and Doogie is filling in for me on Tuesday as I take a couple of well-deserved days off. So, basically, Kellyanne Conway says this regarding Hillary Clinton. She basically is, again, insulting half of the country. And let me tell you something, lady. I love when Kellyanne Conway says, lady. The idea that I or other women like me have to ask our husbands how to vote, it's really a joke. Particularly since, I won't say her name, but I'll appeal to you directly, particularly since this country knows who you are first and foremost because of whom you married. Oh, burn. And so stop pretending you're a feminist. You're for equality. You're for fairness to women. And then running around accusing us of checking with our husband and significant others before we vote? Yes, indeed. That is Kellyanne Conway blasting Hillary Clinton after Hillary basically saying, yeah, you know, she didn't win because white women had to ask their husbands who to vote for. Oh, my Lord. So funny. Anyway, it's coming up on 3 o'clock. We have Phil Valentine coming up next. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can via Twitter or Facebook at Dan Mandis Show. You can also send me an email, dan@997wtn.com. Phil Valentine is up next right here on Super Talk 99.7 WTN.